Blog Talk Radio.
And good day to you all. Thank you so much for joining us here at Mastermind Radio 101. Glad you took time out of your day to have a conversation with me and a very special guest. It's Jacqueline Richards, mortgage consultant, yoga instructor, author of Yoga for Your Personal Finances. And I have to appreciate, just like y'all, a whole lot more. I have to tell you that it's a beautiful day in our nation's capital. I am talking to you from the capital of Canada here in Ottawa. It is a fantastic, fantastic day. Some would say that, you know, plus 30 is a little bit warm. Never too warm for me. I'll just say that out loud. And hopefully the weather's doing right by you. Just a little bit about me and the show. I decided that Blog Talk Radio was an opportunity where we could have pleasant and meaningful conversation. It's an opportunity where we have people who have something to say, something to give. And if you look through all of our past shows, absolutely, lots of people who have opportunities, instructions, who have education and experiences to provide to all of us, not just here in Canada, not just in the U.S., but around the world. Sometimes the same things can be felt and said, maneuvered, and manifested. So appreciate that while we sit here listening and participating with our very special guest, we're not alone. We're absolutely not alone. In my mortgage business, I've seen a lot. I have seen a lot. We've been through some ups and downs, and people have heard situations and stories that may not be for them, but for mom or for sister or for brother. And they're not just fighting the rules, but fighting to stay strong, stay up, stay solid. In these days of economic questions, I suggest that we continue to have these conversations because there are options and strategies that we can all take. At this very moment, I ask you to take a real deep breath and exhale completely, because my special guest, Kim McLeod, a.k.a. Grandma Kim, is here to chat with us. She's an extraordinary woman I've had the opportunity to work with. She's helped me through so much. We're mommies. There's a whole lot of mommies out there, and there's mommies that believe there are no toolbox. But if we can open up the lines of communication with those who may be going through what we're going through, have gone through what we've gone through, have strategies to move forward in a real positive way, why not open a book to that? Kim, if you've taken a look, you know, she's incredibly comfortable, and she's going to tell us why she's so colorfully comfortable. She's got some incredible healing knowledge that she sends out. She has seminars and workshops that she delivers to anyone who decides, you know what, I could use a little bit of help. How about a little bit of support? She's absolutely 100%. She's all about being authentic, not just with her staff, not just with her clients, not just with the young girls and the young women that she connects with, but she's absolutely authentic with herself. That's number one, don't you think? Please join me in welcoming Kim McLeod, a.k.a. Grandma K. You there, Kim?
I'm here. Thanks, Jack. That's awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah, authenticity, eh?
You know what? End all be all. I think we forget that in this crazy social networks that we have. It's, if we can't be authentic with ourselves, we have some work to do. But you're going to tell us all about the opportunities that you provide people every single day. Can I ask, now I blathered about you, but how about you tell us, what's your background? What brought you here?
Oh, wow, big question. Lifelong journey. Let me start with my book. You know, I think my book, Wishing Diaries of a Teen Pregnancy, kind of was the launch point for me and my commitment to giving back and sharing what I know from my experiences. And in part, you know, what I had learned before I got to that place was that if people do not share their knowledge, then we are crippling each other. We are We are limiting our capacities for really such a small price of fear that might keep us from saying what we feel that we need to say, and when we don't, the impact can be devastating. And so one of the examples of that is, you know, as a young girl, I did have a teen pregnancy. You know, the name of the book is Wishing Diaries of a Teen Pregnancy. And learning to be, let me just bring it back to authenticity, learning to be authentic is so linked to our esteem. In fact, I would almost say it's practically the same thing. You know, being comfortable in our own skin, being comfortable saying what we observe, being brave to say what we see and feel without worry for repercussion and shame or all those nasty things that kind of keep us limited. I wrote the book, and Jacqueline, the way that you began, so that we know that we're not alone and we're not crazy. That's the line right at the front of the book, eh? I've written it so that you know you're not crazy and you're not alone. And that's my mantra. I'd have to say that's my mantra. I'm going to speak so that people know that they're not alone and they're not crazy.
Because sometimes it feels like that. People tell us that all the time, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. And it's very easy to be stuck in that place where we feel alone, but we're the only one. And, you know, when you step beyond the fear of that place, you'll discover that there are people like you in all circumstances. No matter whether it's a teen pregnancy or a bullying experience, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
Abuse, relationship abuse.
Now, you wrote this beautiful book.
Hmm.
How was it received?
So many people have just had so much gratitude and were compelled to read it in a day or two. They couldn't believe, they either just couldn't believe the story or were so relieved to know that their story wasn't the only one. Lots of gratitude. I would say that's been a big part of what this book offers. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I don't feel like I wrote the book, and not to make myself small, but I stayed authentic to who I was when I wrote this book, when I put it together, because these are my actual diaries from when I was a teenager, because I've always journaled, and that's been a great process.
Yours. Okay.
Yeah. So putting them to print to share with others, you know, is, I guess that's my gift, you know, so they know they're not crazy.
That's the courage to do it, because, you know, what was the span of time between you gave birth to your son?
Daughter. Yeah. Gave birth to my daughter.
And,
27
little girls. And so, what was the time between you giving birth and writing the book? Because there had to be a sequence of events, I imagine, that occurred to allow you to write the book.
Yes. Here's the most pivotal point where I first began the seed of commitment to speaking about teen pregnancy. Teen pregnancy is only a symptom of a larger picture of esteem issues in young women and young men. But the pivotal point was when I became pregnant, and I was the first girl to attend school at my high school, Brookfield High School here in Ottawa. And, you know, the principal at the time asked me if I wouldn't be more comfortable somewhere else. And I had to navigate some of those awkward moments that aren't so awkward anymore. I mean, I'm not saying that that prejudice doesn't still exist in some respects, but back then it was pretty heavy. And as I proceeded through my pregnancy and continued through high school, 11 different girls came up to me the first couple months, all in admiration that I was carrying my child to term, that they too had been pregnant and had a termination. And I, right there, I knew that I wasn't alone. I was just doing a different part of it, but I was carrying to term, but I wasn't alone. And I also thought, oh my gosh, all these 11 girls, they don't know that each other has had this experience either. And they're all alone. But not alone. So it's kind of a paradox.
So they kept it secret.
They kept it secret. I fundamentally believe that if we do not discuss, I don't want to say sexual health is just one component, but if we do not discuss with our children the qualities of their behavior, the qualities that they have as they're growing up, then we're doing them a disservice to navigate through their sexual health. And let me just back up and explain that. When I talk about qualities, we tend to praise children. I'm talking about toddlers, you know, preschoolers, first, second, third, fourth graders. We say, oh, good boy, good girl. But we don't define what the qualities are that they have or possess as they do something. So if your daughter is hammering a nail into a board, you would say, you have a strong hand for hammering. Instead of, good girl, you got that nail in there. Good girl doesn't define the parts of who she is or who she can grow to be.
Ah.
Or a boy, same thing. If your boy is washing dishes and you say, oh, good boy, you finished your chore, that doesn't define, wow, you put those dishes in a very orderly fashion there. That's a great skill. That helps them build definition of who they are going to be as a boy or a girl, and confidence and capacity.
But that's a mindset that one needs to fall into, right? We, as a community around the world, it just seems so easy to say, good boy, good girl, instead of defining, you know, what was it? What was so great? What was so good? On the other side, do we define, and it wasn't such a good idea to steal the candy from the candy store and not pay for it?
I think there is a hunger around the world to have more depth of a relationship with self and others. I think in part, you know, we've created this social network of Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and all these capacities to connect because we're hungry. And if you are feeling a hunger to have more connection, then you're going to have or build a willingness to slow down a little bit and look at what it is that you're saying and make a commitment to that practice. Say, well, I'm observing my child and I want to say good boy. You could say good boy, but then you could always go back and say, you know, you're very orderly when you do dishes. I appreciate that. Just because we don't say it in the moment doesn't mean that we're not thinking about it or learning to think about it. But we can always go back for our children and we can always make the commitment to say, I liked what I saw. You did that skill very well.
Wow. I have to say, I have a candy dish of things I want to talk to you about. But I'm just going to throw this one out there. The Dove commercials that we've seen. And they have, I don't know if it's one or two commercials, about self-esteem.
Yes.
For girls. Your comments on that? Have you seen them, I should say?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I
knew you had.
There's one called Onslaught. You can find that on YouTube. You can find all the Dove commercials on YouTube. The Onslaught is quite powerful. And I don't think they play them enough. There's not enough play on those commercials in our television world and our online world to really make an impact or to spark critical thinking about the commercials that we are watching. You know, one of the ones that I look at that counters the Doves, because I think the Dove commercials are great. They address the impact of media, visual media on young women as they're growing up, whether it's thin models or, you know, the push to have a diet or a better something. It's all market driven and it's all external versus, you know, the internal dialogue that can be happening from the time they're children saying, you've got great skills, you're so strong, what an amazing capacity you have. That's internal dialogue that's going to help them navigate more than, I mean, the commercials are great because they'll start critical thinking, but the internal dialogue still needs to be built on to increase esteem. I find that most commercials are counter esteem building. They appeal to our hunger and our ideas of what we have to be like versus how perfect we are as we are.
Now, does that feed into self-destruction? Does that feed into sort of an injurious way of thinking? If that's the anti-death commercial mentality that we're looking at day after day, we're not thin enough. We don't have a clear enough skin. Our hair isn't quite right. Is our network, our marketing, our media, are they feeding into that sort of mindset for young women and girls?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the last 25 years, marketing organizations have shifted their target group to be the age 6 through to 12-year-olds. And if you look at marketing products like Hilary Duff or you know, even Justin Bieber currently, those are, you know, pop idols, but they're being marketed to young girls in that age group. So you can now see young girls wearing you know, midriff tops and little short skorts, you know, on the beach, and they almost look like prostitutes, but they're little girls. So we're, there's just this mindlessness that continues to go on. It's not that, I don't think it's self-destructive because they're not, these young people that are being targeted are not yet self-directing their lives. When they do begin to self-direct their lives and they mess up, well, then you can say that's pretty limiting, right? That's self-destructive. But it doesn't guarantee that all will go that way. That's why I do the work that I do, is to help raise awareness and critical thinking and learning language of love and capacity to share with your children so that you can give them the tools to better exercise their choices in the future. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and more.
All right.
But so much more. You know, we chatted about that particular piece, but also it's about the diet commercials. Now, when you see mom deciding to go on a diet, so whether it's, LA Weight Loss or Jenny Craig or even Weight Watchers, what message is that sending to our little girls? Is it a double-edged sword?
Wow, you know, this really hits a sore spot for me, I guess. You know, this year I've been dedicated to a healthier lifestyle for myself, to losing weight for myself. It's the first time in my life that I've made a decision to do it for myself and my health versus ideas of I have to, everybody else is a certain size, or I'm not pretty because I don't fit the certain size ideals that I grew up with. At the same time, you know, I look at these choices. I think diet plans themselves, that is not a problem because it's an opportunity for people to learn how to eat healthy. That can't be wrong. The struggle is when you're learning to eat healthy and you're successful, but then you self-sabotage and you come back to old behaviors, and then you have to go on a diet again You know, in my experience, I looked at my mom's bookshelf when we were helping her to move, and I saw 40 years of different diet books. I was just kind of going through them. I was like, that's my entire life. Look at that. Right? And what that impact had for me, you know, different ideas that I've had to work through or work out of for myself. So on its own, a one-off, no problem. But if you're repeating and it's cyclical in your behavior, then you're not quite catching what it is that you need to do. And that is probably going to be resting in your heart and your mind, and it's more about your thinking and your feeling than it is about food. Because you can learn to eat healthy food, and you probably look at that cake and eat it, and you sit there and say, yeah, but I know what's healthy. So there's a sickness in the thinking that's going on. And if that keeps repeating itself as moms, as parents, as dads, and our young children are watching that, then yes, that ends up being a problem. Because we're not addressing our fear of success. And so if we don't address our own stuff in our minds and our hearts, then we really are limiting our ability to reinforce children making the best choices. Lots of people sit there and say, do as I say, not as I do. Yeah, doesn't work. Does not work. You know, you can say that all you want, but the reality is children from the time they're wee ones are watching you. They have patterned you. This is how they learn. This is how their brain grows, as they watch every move that you make, every innuendo, every little slight something. They'll know when you're angry before you even know that you're angry. Just from the slight shift of your eyebrow. And you can sit there and say, I'm not angry. They know different. They've got the message because they're cool on the whole body cue thing.
Absolutely.
So you can't fool them.
And isn't it interesting when they say something absolutely profound to you and you wonder, how does this six-year-old understand what they just witnessed?
Yeah.
You know.
But they're not burdened with all of the noise of our world yet, you know, in the sense that, you know, as we grow up and we're often told to abandon what we know to conform to a lot of social rules. And I don't mean global social rules. So certainly, you know, you have to manage rules of school and rules, you know, when you talk to people and being polite, for sure. That's how society is going to work. But then there's rules within families where, you know, people have belief systems that say you're to be seen, not to be heard. Right? And once you start to acquire those rules, you start to push yourself, that unique self that each child has, that unique potential to be the awesome person that they're going to be, starts to get burdened and limited. And that, you know, that's a bit of a shame. That happens in families. It's when parents, you know, I guess some of the best work that I do is when parents want to change their limiting beliefs for themselves. And a lot of times they come because, you know, it's for their children, because their children's behavior has gotten so bad that they don't know what to do with it. But it all comes back to the limiting beliefs that we as parents and adults hold for ourselves that we have quietly burdened our children with.
I love that, quietly burdened. Unknowingly burdened.
Yes.
And you're saying this, and I understand that you work with young girls, teens, young women, but that shout out went to everybody.
Yes.
I mean, that's not a specific demographic. That is people that you just addressed. And I think
Absolutely.
That's absolutely brilliant. When you say fear of success, you know, for me, personally, if I think I have failed at something, I will pull out my Sara Lee chocolate cake and a big glass of coffee. And I'm busy dating myself. And I recognized when that happened, as my daughter had said to me, Mom, are you sad again? Wow. Okay. That was a statement.
Yes. Isn't that something, eh? Out of the mouths of babes, we say.
Oh, yeah.
They catch us in our moments of vulnerability. And, you know, those moments, what would happen if they became our lifestyle, the vulnerability? You know, that's, I think, you know, some people might say it's altruistic to think that we can be our true selves and be vulnerable with others. There will always be some people that will receive that and respect that, and there will be those that cannot. They don't have the capacity to do that. But I still say better toward being authentic, vulnerable. We're human. We make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And I guess the key is that, you know, you learn from your mistakes. How can you learn from these mistakes? One of the things I wanted to share with you, Jacqueline, was, you know, we can talk about the language and stuff, but I think the other piece that really helps girls' esteem is introducing choice from a very young age. Choice to, you know, pick which pajamas they want to wear or which, I mean, this is an ongoing issue. It's a big debate every time I have a workshop. It's, you know, well, I can't let my daughter go out to school because I say let them pick clothes to go to school. Well, she'll just make a mess in her room. And, you know, Barbara Coloroso is the first person I ever heard say this. Is, you know, well, does she want to wear, you know, the yellow shorts and top or the blue shorts and top? That's a choice. It's a controlled choice, but it's still a choice, right? You don't have to say, go willy-nilly, you pick anything you want. But the more that you give them choice, the more capacity they will learn. You know, same with money. If you give your children money, you know, from as early an age as they can start to identify their coins, you know, maybe grade one would probably be a good place, even maybe even before that, depends on if they have brothers or sisters that are working with money. But you give them money and, you know, you let them buy something, right? You know, they save their money and they've got money and they've got $5 and they want to go to the store and buy a video. This can play out two ways. One, either the video is $3.99, you know, or $4.99. You have to pay up a little bit to help them get the video. That's fine. They get the video, but then they have nothing the next day or the next weekend when they see the video they really wanted. And when those moments come, then you're very empathetic. You do not say, I told you so, you should have, but you just sit there and you listen. So this is another thing I want to come back to is listening, so we'll come back to that. But you listen to them as they experience their pain. And you say, that's difficult. Yeah, I'm really sorry. You know, it's hard not to get what you want. You know, what can you do different? What if you saved more money and waited, right? But you might repeat that, you know, 7-8 times over. Better that you are doing it and practicing that when they are small and they're 5, 6, 7, 8 than when they're 18, 19, 20 and the price tags are a lot bigger.
Much bigger.
Much bigger. You know, like you want that 16 gig iPod or, you know, iTouch phone. Hello. Price tags inflate with age.
I don't even have one.
Well, this is it. You've learned your lessons well then, Jacqueline.
Yes, I have.
You know, but choice is really important. And choice, having that skill and providing them supported opportunities as they grow up. Don't think that because you haven't done it to date that you can't begin, right? Just give kids heads up because, you know, when they're 8 and older, they're pretty savvy, so you just got to give them a heads up that, you know, you're going to let them start to have some choice in different areas and support them. But better they have this skill about choices and the impact it has on their life because of their decisions, right? Choice and consequence.
Absolutely.
Pretty straightforward versus, you know, never having to exercise choice. Really just kind of always having something handed to you and and then you reach some later place and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so screwed. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And sadly, it's very stressful. It would be stressful for any of us if we were thrown into a situation. It's like, oh, now suddenly I'm 18 and they say out you go and I don't know what to do and I'm messing up.
Exactly. Exactly. Where's my sugar daddy? Where's my sugar mama? Where's all that money that they kept giving me? Where's the chef who always made sure I had food on the table?
Yeah. Sugar daddies, sugar mamas. Can I just go on a little segue there?
Sure.
Sugar daddies, sugar mamas. You know, we have this whole Jersey Shore show going on and all these shows that are depicting that, you know, when I grow up, well, it's going to be easy. I'll just get myself a boyfriend. I'll just get on a reality TV show. Right? And there's this whole other culture that's evolving out of these shows that's just kind of, you know, I'll finish up high school, but then, you know, then I'll just party. Because that's really what, that's all we have to do. It's just like, oh my gosh. I'm stressing. And I stress a little bit, you know, I'm thinking about 18 beyond, but, you know, even those that are up and coming, the younger ones, there's so much influence about being sexualized, about partying, about giving yourself away. If you watch Big Brother or any of the other shows, everybody, you know, we're watching people end up in bed together. Not explicit, but, I mean, those things are happening in the shows. And it's just like, oh, my goodness. You don't think your kids are watching
it? What part was get to know me?
Yeah.
What part was...
Well, we don't have enough time for that on NBC and ABC, so let's just cut down to the graphics. And that's doing a disservice to our communities of children.
Yes, it is.
It really is. And not, you know, I don't want to say, you know, adults like it. There's some adult content and there's some excitement about it as well. So that you can be a parent who's got small children and this is like your favorite time at night. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch Big Brother 5, 17, whatever number it's at. And, you know, that's okay. As long as you are still, you know, exercising your own feet being on reality of your world, go ahead. You know, take a little trip. Let your mind relax to a show of whatever that is. But, you know, if your behaviors are in line with that show, then your children's behaviors will be in line. And I don't necessarily think that that's healthy. I think that's got just more opportunities for awakening.
Wow. And does that spawn into that whole idea of listening to what's said, whoever says it,
well, that's,
on whatever forum?
On listening, I truly believe the common influence I see parents struggling with are they are busy running from themselves. And they do not stop and listen to themselves. And if they are so busy running, then that's the pace they're setting for their children. And if a parent does not have the skill to listen to themselves and to listen to the internal dialogue, to listen to their fears and to recognize them within themselves, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. Susan Jeffers, great book. You know, if we don't look at our own stuff, the fear that stops us, the fear that we're running from, if we don't find a way to look at that for ourselves, we won't be able to listen to our children. One of the, you know, here, let's go through an example. There's a woman that runs challengeday.org. Phenomenal organization. Would love to see them come to Ottawa. Someday we'll have that happen.
Wonderful.
They address esteem in group settings in high schools. And they really work on a philosophy of, you know, peer one-to-one kind of connecting, creating bridges for everybody. They make some powerful changes within schools. And if those changes could also happen for parents, that would be phenomenal as well. Anyway, one step at a time, right?
Right.
This woman who is one of the leads of this organization, she is a mom and she has a teenage daughter, and her story went a little bit like this. Her teenage daughter came in and was just super upset about something and was just, you know, oh my God, it's the end of the world, but I can't believe it. And there was some content in there that really triggered stuff off for the mom. You know, and we'll just play out. I can't recall exactly, but let's say, you know, it's something to do with he wanted to have sex. Whoa. What parent would be like, holy crap, right? White knuckling it, listening to this. And you want to start on your own rant saying, there's no way this is going to happen. You're grounded. You're staying in the house. Where's the chastity belt? You give me your cell phone, you know, because that's where our fear lives, right? Our fear lives there. Now, this great exercise that she did about listening and supporting her daughter having choice, because what she did is she listened actively. She said, okay, wow, you're really angry. And she, for the most part, just let her daughter talk. Blah, 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 blah. Right? Have her space to be upset and go on. And you know, she listened and she, you know, maybe asked another question, you know. So, well, you know, how did that make you feel? And, oh, well, there she went on a whole other tangent. After about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, daughter just kind of stops, looks at her mom and says, oh, I feel so much better. Thanks, Mom. And then off she went. Right? So mom's like, oh my Lord. You know, but the girl in that rant worked everything out. And all the mom needed to do was be present and listen actively to her. And she was able to work it out. And a lot of times, excuse me, our kids can do that. They have the capacity.
You give them the opportunity, right?
You give them the opportunity to work it out. And you set aside, you know, launching into your fear of what that's going to mean. You set it aside for your adult time to go and deal with it, get your support group, your friends, your colleagues, your therapist, your doctor, your clergyman. You get your community and you work out your stuff so that even when you have to come back and say, we need to talk about you using drugs, or we need to talk about safe sex. Excuse me for a minute. I got a cough. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no problem. And you are touching on all of the things that we hear about on an ongoing basis in all of our communities. And I know you'll continue on, but I feel like my hands are tied together, because as soon as there's a magic age that these kids get to, that as parents, we can't do anything, never mind our teachers and our principals and our, as you say, clergy. There is a magical age. We're not allowed to step in and help. We're not allowed to step in, hold and hug, and say, you know what, we need to talk about this. We need to get you to a place where you can hash all of this out. That perfect place, like here, it's I think 14, that as parents we are stuck. We can't take our kids to, you know, the rehab center that they need to be at. I mean, they're just coming out of elementary school, and this is what we're dealing with. Parents don't get it. Parents need that support. Getting out there, I need some help. Support me while I continue to support my kids.
Right. You know, let me just, when you began talking there, one of the things I was thinking about was there's never a time where you can't say something. There is nobody holding a gun to your head or a muzzle or has you tied up and gagged. So there's really no excuse, unless it's one of those three things, for not saying something. You can always say something. You may not get the responses you want, but you can always say what it is that you see, how you feel, you know, what your needs are, and most exceptionally, to your children, how you are concerned. how much you love them and how much you're concerned. When, you know, in my diaries, when I went through my experiences, you know, my experiences leading to my pregnancy, I was playing with drugs and alcohol and having, you know, sex. Well, clearly I was having sex. I ended up pregnant. There's the story. But through that time, you know, using drugs, you get separated into a different world. You just kind of like, you don't give a shit, pardon my language, but then you do. And you are consumed by a behavior, but that doesn't mean that you don't hear what your parent is saying. And there are times in my life and in my story where significantly I saw my mom's behavior, I would hate her behavior, but I also got it that she cared about me, you know, that she was worried about me. She was brave enough to write notes to me and to say that she's worried about me, you know, and just give me the space at different times. And give me the space. I'm not really sure how much of it was giving me the space and how much of it was she was, like, freaking out. Well, she definitely was freaking out because I gave her a real run. And I'm blessed to know that she loved me through it as much hell as I gave them. But never once did she not speak her concern. And she didn't rag me out. I mean, there's times, sure, where I'd say, like, oh, my gosh, you're totally on my case. Screw off.
Yeah.
But she didn't stop saying her concerns. And I strongly encourage every parent, in the best and most loving way you can, never stop expressing your concerns to your child. It doesn't matter if they are a meth head, a coke head, if they're prostituting, if they are separate from you and have abandoned your family at norms. Like the worst scenarios you can think of, never stop telling them that you love them and you're concerned for them. Never. Because they can hear it. I know that they can hear it. They just cannot do something about it. They cannot respond. You know, so having expectations of how someone's going to respond, that's their timeline at that point as they navigate those life hardships.
Wow.
And, you know, as far as you know, the way that our systems are set up, based on people we elect, you know, on fear. We're fearful that, you know, we're just fearful of really speaking out, I believe. And we're fearful that, you know, the variety of concern that we have from all the different people and all the different groups, maybe it's just the best that we can do. But you still have a voice.
Okay. We have 1 minute to go.
Okay.
I want people to know how are they in touch with you? How do we come to your sessions? Because you know what? This is so incredible that we can have this conversation. How do we find you?
Well, you can go to my website, grandmak.ca. That's
yeah.
The letter K. And, or you can email me, info@grandmak.ca. We have a girl and mom workshop coming up in this fall. So there's a great opportunity to do some bonding and to learn about listening and choices and hopes and dreams for each other as we build esteem together as mothers and daughters. So, you know, if you have an interest to join me for that, send me an email. And, ongoing parenting courses about how to do choice, how to listen, how to have languages of love.
That we could all use.
We could all
I
use.
Think.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Now, how are we finding your book? It's on your website. We can
it's
find it.
It's on my website. Absolutely, yes. It's on my website. It's available through Amazon.ca.com, Barnes & Noble. Oh, geez, where else is it? Chapters. You can order it through any of those or through my website.
Excellent. Wishing Diaries of a Teenage a teen Pregnancy. Thank you so much, Grandma Kay, a.k.a. Kim McLeod, for joining us, for enlightening us, for sharing your experiences. I'm Jacqueline Richards in our nation's capital, and I thank all of you for stepping in and listening up. Enjoy the day. Thanks, Kim.